Welcome to the Dork Forest. Jackie and her pals will never bore us. Shameless confessions
about our obsession
will make us laugh and smile. So let's explore the Dork Forest and dork out for a while.
Hi, this is Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. You know the websites, JackieCation.com, DorkForest.com, TheDorkForest.com, which I purchased because I love a determiner, FamilyPetAncestry.com, because I think it's funny. They all go to either DorkForest.com or JackieCation.com. The credits, let's do them. Mike Rickberg composed and sang the intro song. Sang it with his girlfriend, Sarah Cohen. He will sing the Mexican hat dance at the end of the program again with lyrics that he made up. That's right. Patrick Brady, gonna fix this audio, thank God. And Vilmos fixes my website. So if you ever need a website design, talk to Vilmos. His link is in the notes. Merchandise. If you were to want stuff, you'd go to JackieCation.com. You'd go to the store. You could get CDs. I have three CDs, all... Well, two of them critically acclaimed. The first one, just okay. But if you're a completist, you can get all three for a deal. And there's domestic prices and international prices. My last CD, This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux, also available as my first ever DVD. It is only available as a DVD right now because I'm in the process of trying to sell it to somebody to have it stream somewhere for free. And if that doesn't work, I'm going to sell it on some website and then you will know about it. Both This Will Make an Excellent Horcrux and It's Never Going to Be Bread, my last two albums, top 10 comedy albums of the year. Bread was top 10 on Amazon for the year it came out, which was 2010, and Horcrux top 5 on Vulture.com last year. There's also t-shirts. You can get Ranger of the Dork Forest t-shirt. You can get the regular The Dork Forest t-shirts. And you can get the new Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt, which is a reference to one of my newer jokes on the newest album. So they're all union made here in the United States of America, so they run big. Take that into account. Shipping is included, and I can ship them domestically or internationally as well. On JackieCation.com and TheDorkForest.com, there is a donation button. If you enjoy the program, I would love you to donate. You can give me $10 a month for 10 months, or you can give me $100 a year all at once, or you can give me whatever you'd like because it's a donation button. But I would appreciate that. If you have it, it'd be great. It is used only for good. If you don't have any money, that's fine. You've done what you can. There's an Amazon banner on JackieCation.com on the right-hand side above a video of me doing stand-up comedy, I believe. And you click on that banner, you go to Amazon, you order like normal, and Amazon sends me some money for what you order. It doesn't cost you extra. I just get a little kickback, so I appreciate that. On JackieCation.com, there's also a tour page, lots of different places to watch me do stand-up comedy. There's a new thing going on. Besides Spooky Reading Girl t-shirt, which is a new t-shirt that you can buy, I am going to do the live episodes as premium episodes, so they will cost on Bandcamp, thedorkforest.bandcamp.com. And they'll be $2. And that's just to defray the cost of the live ones. There's only going to be a handful a year, and it's $2. You got $2. You're good. And always know in your heart that there will be at least 52 episodes of free ones every year on iTunes and all that stuff. If there's a problem, if you have any issues or anything ever with the show, or if you just want to say hi, my email address is jackie@jackiecation.com. Enough of this. Let's get into the show. It's a good one. Hey, it's Jackie Cation. Welcome to the Dork Forest. I'm in my living room with one Jason Klom. Welcome to the program.
Thank you.
You are welcome. You are late because somebody rear-ended you on
somebody
the highways and byways
did.
Of this great land.
Yeah, but they got rear-ended, so I'm not going to blame them. And I literally was swearing up a storm, but not at them, just more. But I couldn't say, I have a podcast to get to. So I was just like, I had to make it sound like I had a doctor's appointment or something.
Because then you'd have to explain what a podcast
That's
was.
Also part of it.
Granted, we are in Los Angeles. They might have gotten it.
Maybe.
And then they would have said, welcome to Night Vale. And I'm like, no, there's other pods out there.
Cereal?
Is it some? Anyway, but Jason Klom, it's K-L-A-M-M, Klam, is how I would have
That's
phonetically spent
it. Is,
but
yeah.
It's Klom. Mm-hmm. Jason Klom, and it's at J Klom, K-L-A-M-M, on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And your podcast, Comedy on Vinyl, mm-hmm. I was just on that, talking about Lenny Bruce.
That was an awesome episode. You were kind enough to do that, and I appreciate it.
And I was fascinated to speak to something that I know so little of, but it is a vinyl album that I did indeed own regarding stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it was fun to talk about. I mean, that happens all the time, is that people like, I don't have anything to talk about necessarily. Actually, what I'm doing now is I'm shoving an album down their throat.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
Just like, oh, I don't know what to talk about. And you're like, well, what about this one?
Yeah.
And here are the MP3s.
I've got like a small, compared to most people I know, collection of like 250 comedy albums.
That seems plenty.
It does, right? And that's why I don't buy them anymore.
Like, right.
I'm cut off until I make money somehow podcasting.
Right.
Not happening.
Not happening at this time. But
yeah.
One day we'll all be swimming in podcast money.
Oh, yeah. That'll happen. Right? That'll happen.
It could.
Sure.
It doesn't matter.
We'll keep
doing them anyway.
Exactly right. No, that's 100% true.
I started recently charging for the premium episodes, for the ones that are live.
Uh-huh. Oh, that's smart.
Yeah, just because they cost me to go there.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And then I have to pay that other audio guy.
Mm-hmm. People are paying to get in, right?
So. And people are paying to get in, which I have yet to see any of that money. Which is why I try to make it like $5 or $10, you know?
Yeah.
And I try to make, if I do it myself, then I get the money.
Sure. That makes sense.
And then I try to make it like $5 or $10 at the most, because it's only going to be an hour.
Right.
And then I try to do a stand-up show after that.
Oh, okay.
And then charge $15 for the whole night.
That's
and
awesome.
That seems as much as a fancy movie.
Yeah.
Seems, but it's live. I'm right here in front of you.
No, exactly right.
You can totally
talk
to me. Way more fun.
Mm-hmm.
I am an attainable goal as far as poking. Not sexually, just in a sort of a,
naturally.
And not even in
your
a Facebook,
nose.
Naturally.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, in a nose-like way. Jason Klamm, I said to you, what are your dorkdoms?
Yeah.
And you said words I love to hear, something nobody's ever said to me before, which is the vice presidency.
Yeah, that's a big one. That's a big one, and it has been since, 2006, I guess, maybe?
2006!
Yeah.
So for the last 9 years, you have been interested in the vice presidency.
But I haven't done...
You were not a child in 2006.
No, I was not. I was 26.
You were 26,
yeah.
So only for the last 9 years.
Yeah, but the fun part is within the first 5 years of being obsessed with it, I, along with my buddy Matt Sachs in Minneapolis, who's like, we became co-obsessed with it because we were writing a documentary and still are.
Okay.
We became obsessed with it to the point where we sort of realized we are two of the foremost vice presidential experts in the country because nobody else does it.
Because nobody else cares.
Nobody else cares. We would email like historians and this and that. And they're like, that's not really my field. That's not my thing. That's not what historians do. That's not what political scientists do. There's no field that really covers this particular office as a thing.
Right. Why not?
Because nobody cares. And nobody.
Why do you care?
Because
what brought you guys into it?
I'll tell you this. We were going to do the short film, like a short film series, a web series, back when that was still going to be a thing.
When that was a
YouTube.
Thing, people did it.
Oh, yeah. I hate, can I tell you real quick? Webisode shouldn't be struck.
Oh, you know what?
I hate that word.
Yeah, my buddy Joe Wilson hates that word.
Okay.
But people also now hating the word podcast.
Well, they can, I don't
because
know what
of
to
the
tell
iPod.
You about that.
It's, and
I don't
it was
have
named,
an iPod, though. So
right. I have an iPod Touch back in the from the early 2000s, and the fact that it still works is a treat.
That's impressive.
Yes, but so yeah, Webisode is. I think it's out of favor.
Yeah,
but I think podcast will one day because somebody said I don't have a podcast, I have a radio show, and I was like, does it play on the radio? And they're like, it will.
Okay,
and that's where we let it. That's where I stopped talking.
Dreams
to that
are okay, I guess. Have
but
a
it
dream.
Does, and it doesn't matter.
No,
call it whatever you want.
Yeah,
it's a digital file that people get to listen to out of their ear holes.
And we were making this before YouTube, and it was an informational thing, and we settled on one episode of this is going to be about the vice presidency.
Okay.
So my buddy does a little research. He's like, here are some interesting characters. Here's an interesting book. And eventually, we realized we weren't going to do the web series anymore. And we decided it needed to be its own documentary because...
Of one book.
Well, of the vice presidency in general.
No, what book?
Oh, of what book?
What book?
It's
what
called,
book was the book that
this book,
both of you read, clearly?
You need to read it. It is called Bland Ambition. Bland Ambition by Stephen Talley.
How do you spell Talley?
T-A-L-L-Y. He's a wonderful man. He interviewed for the movie back when it was not in HD, and we'll probably interview again when we shoot it in HD.
Right, right.
Super nice guy. He is, and this, what would you guess he might do for a living if he's a professor? And he talked to us about the vice presidency on campus.
Poli-sci professor?
I think it's agriculture related.
He's in the ag school.
Mm-hmm.
University of Minnesota?
He's in Purdue, but he does something related to agriculture. So this is a side thing for him, but it's one of the things he's best known for.
And has published a book called Bland Ambition. Yeah. And the two of yous, you and your buddy Max, read it.
Matt.
So, sorry, yeah, so, no, what is Matt's last name?
Sax, which is why you thought his name was Max.
That's it, Matt Sax. Matt? S-A-X?
S-A-X-E.
S-A-X-E?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, nice.
He's all right. Nice gentleman.
Like a Saxon.
Exactly right.
Well done. Now, here we are. Already, I'm fascinated. What is Bland Ambition about?
Bland Ambition is, it picks out probably the more humorous stories about all the vice presidents, which means anybody who became president, too. Our documentary is going to be about guys who never became president.
Okay.
But anytime they were in
one
the vice president.
Wonders,
exactly,
man.
Right. This was more interesting.
You should call
me.
It One Hit Wonders. You may use that if you want.
I would, except we've been sticking with this title for so long.
Right.
That it's now, I bought the website and everything. What am I going to do, Jackie?
Yeah, you can't can't do One Hit Wonder, which probably is already owned
probably
by someone else.
Taken.
Will you tell us? What the name of that website is?
Vicepresidents.com. The full title is Vice Presidents Being Number Two in the White House. It is the stupidest, childish title.
Precedent. Very nice.
So, yeah. it's a little highbrow and a lot of lowbrow by saying number two. That's what we do.
That's what you like to do. Mm-hmm. You like to mix it up, make it funny. And that's what Bland Ambition was, because he did humorous tales of various vice presidents.
And it's all his original research. And that's the one thing I would say that we have different is because we're trying to make a movie is like all we had to pull from was his book and the three or four other books that have actually chronicled the whole vice presidency.
And when were these he wrote his book here in the 21st century?
In the 90s.
He wrote it in the 90s.
Yeah, mid to late.
So the other, let's say, three books, when were they written?
Let's see. One was, I want to say 70s or 80s, written by a now retired senator whose name I cannot remember.
No worries.
And he wrote it more as an official duty type of thing.
Oh, what was it called? Any idea?
No.
Nope. There you go.
There's
that's fine.
One called Mad Men and Geniuses, written by, oh my God.
I can Google
Barsman
it.
Is his last name.
Okay.
Also a great book.
Okay.
And then there are a couple others. I can't remember because it's, you know, the facts are the funny facts are the ones that stick out.
The funny facts.
Mm-hmm.
What? Where in lies? I mean, I know that Gerry Ford, great athlete, turns out tripped one time and for the rest of his life was known as the vice president who tripped.
Exactly right.
Or the president who tripped.
Sure.
What other fun? Give me one.
All right.
Hook me up.
Okay. There is a gentleman. Let me one second, real quick here. Here we go. So I wrote down because I knew I'd be nervous. My three favorite or most interesting VPs. There's one named John Breckinridge. John Breckinridge was a VP. Again, I'm so obsessed with the VPs, I often forget who they were under.
Oh, okay.
So I know most of them, but Breckinridge, for some reason, is escaping me. Either way, he was from Kentucky.
Okay.
Kentucky, not a Confederate state. He joined the Confederacy anyway.
Okay.
After he was vice president for the actual United States.
He was vice president before the Civil War?
Before the Civil War.
And then during the Civil War,
he joins up with
decides
the Confederacy.
Decides to be a Confederate.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's from Kentucky, border state.
Yeah, border.
That'll happen.
So,
of course. Happen.
But he was technically a traitor, and he became...
But wasn't everyone technically a traitor, and then everyone was acquitted or
Yeah, but
it,
because
or,
he was coming from a Union state and doing that, I think it was a little harsher, and it was...
And he was vice president.
Yeah.
Maybe because
he was formerly vice
president.
Yeah.
Maybe too much pub.
Yeah, you're right. But when he came back, he ended up being a senator anyway, I think, and he was fine and dandy. But in between that... He ran away thinking they were going to hang him, which maybe they were going to. And when he ran away with his group of soldiers, and this is documented, they dressed up like pirates. They jacked a boat, and then their boat got taken over by real pirates.
Whoa.
They ended up in Cuba, again, celebrated, and then he was overseas for several years. But the fact that they got taken over by real pirates is one of the funnier.
That is one of the funnier ideas. Mm-hmm. Okay, so they dress like pirates. They got themselves some parrots and some cutlasses.
So. They must have.
And so what their unions, let's go Confederate, we're talking 1865.
Yep.
They're skinny. They're in shreds.
Sure.
They've lost.
Yep.
Things are troubled.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we're going to be hanged.
Yep.
So he was a colonel or in charge
of... He was, I believe, the Secretary of War. He was very high ranking.
Oh, so he had a squad that was assigned to protect him, probably.
That's probably who it was.
He wasn't like Jeb Stuart or something with his own troops.
Right, no.
He had a bunch of dudes who were like, well, you're the Secretary of War. We're supposed to protect you.
Uh-huh.
And how many guys were in his unit?
That
do
I don't know. That's a very good question. Right. I don't know all the details about that. I should.
Because I picture him and like nine guys.
Yeah, me too. Kind of like
that. And they take over a boat and then they sail off into the sunset to be taken over. In that area, a lot of pirates.
Yeah.
Things are happening.
Oh, yeah.
And then they get captured by pirates and they are matey, are made to walk the plank. And how did they get out of that?
I don't know. Well,
they just dropped him off?
They eventually got, I think they got away because, or not got away, but they got dropped off in Cuba because they were probably of no,
the more you know, you guys.
No consequence.
We want to know more about John Breckinridge.
We do.
Go to your local library, you guys.
It's well, and good luck. But try and find. This is the problem. Is like I know. If you ask Matt, if you had Matt here, Matt is an encyclopedia.
Okay.
I'm the comedy writer of the group, so he tells me the facts. I absorb what I think are the funniest facts, and I turn it into comedy. So every once in a while, there are details missing. You know?
Fair enough. He's got access to minutiae.
Like Matthew Perry. Does that count? He looks a lot like Matthew Perry.
He looks a lot like Matthew Perry.
Breckinridge looks a lot like Matthew Perry.
Well, that's hilarious.
It's amazing.
All right.
There's a comparison online that somebody drew, which I'm like, I'm shocked that anybody knew who Breckinridge was. But it was, although that's the other thing too, is like a lot of VPs are like hometown heroes in the places they're from because every hometown needs somebody.
You got to have somebody. Yep. South Milwaukee, Wisconsin, the guy who invented putting plastic wrap on top of dry cleaning. That's all we got. That is not a toy, by the way.
That is not a toy. No.
That is because that will kill your baby. But what you because he was the one who said, you know what we're going to do? We're going to keep all the chemicals inside your clothing and we're going to hang that. That's what I was told as a child. Granted, grain of salt. Heard it from Elliot Cation, my father. So all stories that stem from that source need to be double checked. Okay, so next up, who's your second guy?
All right, the second one would be William Rufus Duvain King.
Rufus Duvain King.
William Rufus Duvain King, yep.
What do you know about him?
He was our 13th VP, and he was under Pierce.
Okay.
Franklin Pierce, that's correct. But, that's a cheap joke. He was very much believed to have been the lover of Buchanan, who was supposedly our only gay president, more obviously gay president. And actually, he's the one, we did shoot like a thing for the documentary to get it pitched, you know, like a sizzle reel, whatever.
Oh, right.
And the way we did that is we decided, well, what's the one thing an idiot would concentrate on if they were going to make this? So it would be that he was gay. There's plenty of real information about him, which we put into it. But the whole thing is, if you're not paying attention, you just think it's a big gay joke and you think we're idiots.
Right. And you're like, but thank God someone's still making that gay joke.
Yeah, right.
Good Lord.
Yeah. And so we wanted to do that. Like, that's one of the things that we did with it is just, you know, make fun of it.
Well, so William Rufus Duvain King was vice president under Franklin Pierce.
Yep.
My Latin teacher in high school, also named Miss Pierce. Mm-hmm. Her great-grandfather changed the spelling of his name because he hated Franklin Pierce.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't even know what Franklin Pierce's politics were.
I don't offhand. Either, to be honest.
So I don't,
and
don't
neither
even,
did King.
Neither did King because King was a bit of an idiot?
No. Most VPs were chosen, and maybe not at random, but he was VP for maybe a month and none of that on American soil.
Why? So what happened?
He was recovering from TB trying to recover from TB in Cuba.
Again, Cuba,
trying to dry up in Cuba. And he was sworn in Cuba, the only vice president ever sworn in off the U.S. shores. Yeah. And shipped back. And he lives about a week before he croaks.
He dies.
So he was VP for about a week on American soil.
If only his president had been Harrison.
Mm-hmm.
And then Harrison could have died, and then the VP would have died, and then all of a sudden, finally, that gig that everybody's irritated about, Secretary of State,
finally.
Would have happened.
Mm-hmm.
I think isn't that the order? I forget.
Speaker, I think, is next.
And then Speaker of the House?
Maybe. Okay. I could be wrong.
Yeah, because I think Alexander Haig jumped the line.
Yes, he did.
And with Reagan. So William Rufus Duvain King, second favorite. Who else you got?
Charles Curtis. Charles Curtis was VP under Hoover. Because of that, obviously, you know, kind of a damned they're a damned administration. But he was also an a-hole, just a royal a-hole. He basically sicked the Marines on a bunch of military men who were striking to get their pensions.
Okay.
They were on the White House lawn.
He was the one who called it.
Yep. He sicked the Marines on them. They ended up settling.
I remember
the problem,
that
but,
though.
Yeah.
No, that was a giant riot.
Uh-huh.
It was all the veterans
huge.
From World War One,
mm-hmm.
and they didn't get their pensions, they didn't get their mm-hmm. back pay, they didn't get any of that.
Yep.
And it wasn't Hoover; it was Charles Curtis.
It was technically Charles Curtis who called. He's the one who ordered that happen.
Right.
Yeah. So there are a lot. He's also fascinating because he's probably the origin of like the glad-handing politician. Like that whole stereotype is kind of from him
because he's super charming. Or?
Super charming and. Probably a genius, because he's from Kansas, which is kind of where some of my family's from. Which is another reason why I was fascinated with it originally. But
and most geniuses are from Kansas.
Of course.
If you think
everybody
about it.
Knows that. Yeah. But he had his whole constituency, which you have to imagine, even in the tens and 20s, was in the thousands. He had everybody's name memorized, and he knew something about each of them. That was no exaggeration. He would meet somebody and meet him
again
5 years later.
So he just had a really good, one of those great politician memories.
Exactly right.
Yeah.
And that's why people loved him. That's why they voted him up and up and up and up. That, and he also liked to run on the fact that he was 1/8 Native American, which was never proven. He lived on a reservation for a while, but there's no proof that he's necessarily 1/8 Native American. But he liked to consider himself a person of color, even though if you saw him, no.
What did he look like?
Super white, big bushy mustache. Like, big, you know, he could have been an eighth. I don't know, but like...
Right, we all could be an eighth.
Yeah, of course.
It's where's that show?
Mm-hmm.
It's find out who's sleeping with who 100 years ago.
Exactly.
And so in the book Bland Ambition...
Mm-hmm. These are the three guys that I concentrated on.
Okay.
I mean, obviously, you know, there are more recent ones like Dan Quayle, who was, I think, the last one he covered. And, of course, ripped him a new one because he's from Indiana, this guy. And also, you know, don't represent
him. So Tally's from Indiana?
Mm-hmm.
And so is Dan Quayle.
Yep.
And so he ripped him a new one there.
Mm-hmm, I think so. I mean, everybody had. He's an easy target. But, I mean, it was about the right time. I think... I don't know if that's why, but I have to assume that Dan Quayle's existing had some reason for that book coming out. You
okay,
know? Because
he was like, "Who are these people,
mm-hmm.
and how do we
exactly right?
How do I expose these maroons?"
Mm-hmm.
And did he have any vice presidents he liked at all? Were there any great heroes in the book?
There are some. I don't know if he picked any, but like, I know that personally. Again, when I've talked with my buddy Matt, like we are kind of in agreement that there's Henry Wallace. Henry Wallace was under FDR, fascinating guy, but he was a big socialist, borderline actual communist, and that's one of the reasons why he didn't necessarily get along with FDR. And he also invented new like strains of corn and stuff. Like, but an interesting guy, and he was just trying to feed the poor, and he legitimately wanted to do that, and that's why he was awkward and uninteresting.
And then accidentally created Monsanto.
Yeah, right.
And,
yeah,
sure.
Probably. Yeah, that's the kind of thing he was doing, but just like on a low level.
No, I heard about him the third mm-hmm. time he ran. The third time, I think I got that from the FDR documentary.
Oh yeah,
the Ken Burns thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is that when he ran for office the third time,
mm-hmm.
he got Truman
mm-hmm.
because that Wallace was an embarrassment.
Yeah.
And FDR couldn't get rid of Eleanor, who was clearly a socialist, because they were married.
Slightly, yeah.
And so that's interesting. So that seems like a good guy.
Yeah.
Does Matt have any other favorite vice presidents?
Well, there's one other VP who right now whose name is just out of my brain, but which is too bad because he was legitimately probably the greatest man to be a VP. There's no such thing as a good VP because they have one constitutionally derived duty, and that is to break ties in the Senate. That is it.
Right.
If you look, that is all they are required to do. Them backing up the president is obviously written into it, but that is not a duty. That is in case of. That's insurance. Their one duty is to break ties.
Right, but then they also have to travel around and represent.
They
but
can.
It's
they
not
didn't
by
used
law.
To. They didn't used to do any of that, though.
Okay.
Mondale is, we've got an interesting history with Mondale, too, but Mondale is the reason that the vice presidency switched around, and that's
really
yes, because he was an intelligent guy, still is an intelligent guy, open-minded, like big on civil rights, and he was given the opportunity to actually do something, you know.
Okay,
you know, and he changed the office around because he had the specifics. You know, you can't do any you can't issue policies, you can't do anything like that.
Right.
So it's really hard to point to a specific thing, but most people who know anything about him agree that, you know, he actually did something with the office, which is
interesting because he was like the 40th
mm-hmm.
Vice president.
Yeah.
I mean, so the previous 39 guys
mm-hmm.
did what?
They
just kind of sat on their thumbs and waited to break ties?
Yeah. Some of them did stuff. I mean, it would happen every once in a while, but most of them were at the end of their careers.
Okay.
They had already done all their good shit.
Right, and they didn't know if this was the next step to possibly becoming president.
Mm-hmm.
So then,
maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the hardest part, is that they would just sit around. John Nance Garner, who was one of Roosevelt's other VPs, once said, the vice presidency is not worth a warm bucket of piss. And that is about the right attitude that they all had that attitude up until
Mondale.
Yeah.
And he, of course, vice president to Carter,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
Do I have that correct?
Yes, you do.
My poli sci degree, which was, by the way, not domestic. My poli sci degree.
Really?
Very sad. Yeah. Here's a list of presidents and vice presidents.
Yeah.
I'm going to go into the kitchen and look mm-hmm. at my baked chicken for a second.
All right.
And then you find your favorite, the vice president.
Sure,
like.
I can do that. Sorry, I wasn't prepared that we were actually going to talk about this the whole time. I'm sorry.
No, it just happened that I thought.
No, it's good.
Right. I just meant it was.
Oh, that's right. Johnson didn't have one.
Johnson never had a vice president.
Right. I want to say Henry Wilson is the one that. It's either Henry Wilson.
Why didn't Johnson have a vice president?
Because Lincoln was assassinated, and I don't think they cared to bump anybody up to VP. They could have. If he died, obviously, they could have just bumped up the speaker or whatever the rule was at the time. But, yeah, sometimes it's just left open. What is the figure? How many years? 20? I think when we did the math, it was 20-some years worth of empty office throughout the history of the vice presidency.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But, you know, here and there. Yeah. So there were times when some of them just had no VP for part of their term.
Right. Well,
that's right. Teddy Roosevelt didn't have one for a while either because McKinley was shot. It was
right.
I guess just assassinations got in the way.
Yeah, assassinations will get in the way, but then they have to appoint somebody, right?
Sure.
With Nixon, it was Agnew. And then who was Ford's vice president appointed.
Mm-hmm.
But it had been Rockefeller, hadn't it?
Rockefeller was, yeah. And Rockefeller is actually one of the guys who changed the office just because he had nothing better to do. He's an example of exactly that. Like he paid to have a new VP seal commissioned. So
okay.
He had that designed. He's the reason that they're in the lavish location they're in now.
Oh, they have a different office?
Yeah, originally they were just previously? in just a house, probably a nice mansion, but now they're in the Naval Observatory, which is big and huge and pretty.
And has like a big office in there and stuff.
I have to assume so. I want to go. I really want to go.
Yeah, we got to do some tours, some VP touring.
I'll be there in a few months. Maybe I'll do it.
That'd sure. Is it? Did you find the VP you liked?
Yeah, it was Henry Wilson. Henry Wilson. The reason he's fascinating, I don't know everything about his life, but he's fascinating enough because he started out essentially as an indentured servant. Again, he's a white guy, so it becomes a little less impressive when you know that there were actual people being enslaved at the time. But he was an indentured servant.
Because who was he vice president to?
Good question.
But you just saw
it. I just saw his
what
name.
Is it? It's
so
the...
sorry. Yeah. Let's see. Wilson, where the hell is he? Jeez. So sorry. There we go. Ulysses S. Grant. So
he was the vice president of Ulysses S. Grant.
Mm-hmm.
And what was his deal?
Well, he started out as an indentured servant working in a shoe factory.
Okay.
And
this is in – but there when Grant was president, there were no slaves. I mean, there was still
– Right.
I mean,
when he was president. But
not technically.
Sure. When this guy was a child, though. I mean,
He was an indentured servant during slave days.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So, you know, like I said, a little less impressive because he's a white guy. It's not the same thing. It's not slavery, but it's close. Very close. And he worked
his way up.
It's
still fascinating.
Oh, of course. And he worked his way up to being, you know, owning a shoe factory and, like, being a shoe magnate. Is that a thing? Can you be a shoe magnate?
That is a shoe magnate. And I think that there was a book. I wonder if that book was written about him. Horatio Alger?
Oh, yeah, maybe. I don't
it
know.
Could have
it's, been. It's not dissimilar. But he's also an abolitionist. And he became a very strong voice
advocate.
For abolition, yeah.
Yeah. I, too, am an abolitionist.
That's good. I'm so glad to hear it.
I've been thinking about studying out every Facebook post with, I'm an abolitionist. So you may want to not follow this Facebook post if you are not an abolitionist.
Yeah.
yes. And just move forward from that.
Sure.
So his name was Wilson.
Henry Wilson.
Okay.
So now, I could talk to you for an entire couple hours about Aaron Burr, which I guess is the other one that is the most fascinating because he's so divisive with people.
Yeah, he was Thomas Jefferson's vice president.
Yes, indeed.
From 1801 to 1805.
That's exactly right. That's something I actually could have told you.
Saxophonist George Clinton was the vice president for his second term, 1805-1809. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Weird coincidence. So Aaron Burr, I actually read that Gore Vidal book.
Oh, okay. And his book is...
Called Burr.
Called Burr. Takes some liberties because that's what Gore Vidal did.
That's what Gore Vidal does.
Yeah.
He has an opinion, it turns out.
But I will say this. Gore Vidal did call us better interviewers than Ken Burns, so I will take that shit to my grave. So.
Oh, he called you better interviewers than Ken Burns?
Yeah, he said he didn't know
because you got
shit.
To meet Gore Vidal.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's neat.
We interviewed him for a couple hours at his place.
That's incredible.
Yeah. We got to hear him do his Truman Capote impression, which is fantastic. We don't have that on camera, though. We do not have that, and I regret that.
Well, you're going to have to redo it in HD.
Yeah, that's exactly right. It's going to be interesting. We're going to have to CG create him now.
Right, because didn't he die?
He died a couple years ago.
Okay, but I don't know. I haven't been following. Didn't affect my life so much when Gore Vidal died. But I don't think it was a career cut tragically short.
No, I think he had some time.
He was 80s?
He might have been close to 90.
Yeah, so.
And he was kind of ill when we
still
met
sad.
Him.
Still sad for his friends and family.
Sure, absolutely.
But from this distance, I'm okay. Yeah. I lived through it. But I did read Burr, and I completely believed him.
Yeah.
On the other hand, I read Lincoln, and I was like, what's happening? Burr, what do you love Burr?
I love his story. To say he was a dick. I mean, I'm sorry, I'm swearing.
Is that no, cool? Fuck. Right. Okay. Swear it up.
Fucking, okay, great.
Okay,
so,
yeah. He sounded like a button pusher and a piece of work, but not as bad as Hamilton.
There's a few things. Like, if we're going to talk about the duel, which is like the big thing he's known for, I'm on Burr's side. And that's for a number of reasons. But number one is that the guns were chosen by Hamilton. The guns were owned by Hamilton. They killed his son the year before, so he knew full well both guns had a hair trigger, and Burr didn't know that, so Hamilton had an advantage. So he got shot because Burr was a good shot. That's just it. So he was just as much of a scammer.
And Gore Vidal, of course, speculated whether or not it was true that Hamilton had made the reason they had the duel was because he accused Aaron Burr of having sex with his own daughter.
With his own daughter, which... Hey, don't get me wrong. They had a creepy relationship. Big time.
Like, oh, yeah?
It was creepy
but
in
you
that...
know what? Still, at the moment, duel worthy. I mean,
sure.
That was one of your go-tos for dueling.
That's what you did.
Was when someone insulted, I don't know, one of the ladies in your life.
Mm-hmm.
And especially your daughter.
Yeah.
That seems like a lot.
Well, and the other thing, too, is like you could put a lot of puzzle pieces together to dispute that. A lot. I mean, again, that was him... just projecting what he thought, this might have been a rumor that he threw out. Because he said plenty of shit about him in the papers, enough for anybody at the time to call somebody out on a duel. But the thing about Aaron Burr is that he married an intelligent woman she was upper class, so great, she got educated, but he wanted an intelligent woman. They raised an intelligent daughter. He was
now, how do you know that?
How do I know which?
That he purposefully married an intelligent woman. And what the fuck does that mean?
That's just... when I say intelligent, I should have said educated.
Okay.
That was just not a thing.
What was her education?
I don't know, but I know that she's just well known as a very... She was high class, so she was educated.
Okay.
And so they educated their daughter, quote-unquote, like a man would have been.
Okay.
So they gave her a college education.
Okay.
And so he was a feminist.
Okay.
He wanted to raise his daughter so that she could function as a human.
Right.
And that was a big thing. And so the idea that he would somehow then go sleep with his daughter seems really, really... Like, he was effed up. Don't get me wrong. He slept... I don't know that he slept around on his wife, but, I mean, he would sleep with whores. He paraded whores across the Princeton campus, supposedly.
Right. Okay. Aaron Burr?
Aaron Burr did as a young man, as a 16, 17-year-old when he started college. So, yeah, he was a promiscuous fella.
Okay, so he was sleeping with prostitutes before he got married?
Before he got married. There's
and then we don't know
nothing
after.
To say that he did, that he slept around.
But who knows?
Nobody knows. Nobody knows, but there are no reports of it. There are plenty of reports of what happened after, which is where those rumors could have come from, which is he would write letters to his daughter where he would rate the prowess of these prostitutes. And that's a weird relationship to have your daughter with your daughter.
That is weird.
That's where that
from back in the day? So he was still thinking about these ladies from 20 years ago?
No. After, see, his wife died tragically, and unfortunately a few years later.
Prostitutes before and after.
Yeah.
But
exactly
during,
right.
when they were married, he may not have.
He was very likely a loyal guy. He was loyal to his wife, to his family. He's kind of like a nice mafia character in a good show. He's loyal to the family.
He's a family guy.
Exactly.
Sure, I get that.
But he'll fuck
that.
Everybody else for any other reason. Although Jefferson fucked him for the presidency, too, which is another.
Right. That was a political fucking.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
There exactly right. I mean, Aaron Burr was a vote away from being the president. Most people don't realize that.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Vice president then was always second place.
Right. Right. So he could have been. Yeah. Just the way, because that's how they did it initially, which means that it was usually someone diametrically opposed to your own political beliefs.
Yes, exactly right.
If there was a 2-party system, which there was from the very beginning.
Yeah.
So
just different parties.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. And then they were expected to work together, which is why they may not have had a lot to do.
Right.
Because you don't want to give somebody any power.
Of course not. And especially then when it's a direct competition. I mean, there are rumors that Jefferson promised him this and that and this and that and didn't deliver on it, which is another reason why Burr supposedly was planning to take over Mexico and then use Mexico's army to take over America, make it Burrland, and then he would hang Jefferson. He did say he was going to threaten him.
I do vaguely remember hearing a tale of that.
Mm-hmm.
And then, of course, one of my least favorite presidents was Polk.
Uh-huh.
I'm not a big fan of Polk because of the Mexican War, but I suppose it could have been anyone.
Sure.
So what are you going to, what are you going to do?
Well, but that's a good reason to not like a guy.
And George M. Dallas, do you know anything about him? He was Polk's vice president. I'm just going to rattle off names
you
of
you can,
various,
and then I'm going to just
and you're
be
like, nope.
I don't know. Nope, because there's plenty. Again, Matt's the encyclopedia. Matt's
right.
The guy who can tell me the funny stuff.
Right. So what about this other thing that you were talking about, which was archiving? What does that even mean?
That's a good question.
That is your dorkdom.
Well, vice presidency links to it because, I have collected a bunch of shit related to the vice presidency because
really?
I love it so much. And because it's fascinating and interesting to me, even if I do forget a lot. Here's an idea of, my obsessions have run just rampant. When I was 12, I memorized this book about an inch thick of Disney characters.
Okay.
It told you every film each character had been in, what year they first appeared in a movie.
Like deep canon?
Oh, yeah.
Deep canon?
We're talking going back Steamboat Willie on up to the 90s, and I had it memorized.
So I don't know, not Bambi, but who was the Sleeping Beauty?
Mm-hmm.
Was that the one that was scary?
They're all a little scary.
Yeah.
Alice in Wonderland is one that scares me. I don't know.
Oh, that is scary.
It's fucking creepy. Man.
That is creepy. But are there peripheral characters that you knew at this time?
Yeah, this is just it. Is that half, 90% of that's out of my brain right now.
Well, of course.
And that's just
but
it.
That's,
like I
but
lost
that's
it
the,
all. But I could
you like
you.
To collect information is what you're telling me.
I could have told you any peripheral character, though. Because I remember being I would say shit to my mom who just very kind woman. I'd be I had to have said out loud a few times, they were in that. She's like, oh, great, Jay, that's wonderful. Thanks so much.
Very supportive.
Nobody needs that information.
Right.
And I didn't. I thought I was going to be an animator, but didn't happen.
Well, the weirdest thing is that when people do know some of the peripheral characters, and then I like to hear about them.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter that I don't know. Twice in the last 2 days, someone has, for some reason, it's come up twice, and now it is in my head, the name of Boba Fett's ship. In Star Wars.
Slave One.
Slave One.
Yeah.
That is it.
Mm-hmm.
And I could have cared less 2 days ago.
Sure.
And in 2 days from now, may never care again.
Right.
But I think it was explained to me that sometimes people know these things because they collect the action figures.
Sure. Yeah.
Or they're, there's other ways of collecting them.
Yeah.
So, and when I was talking Legos yesterday with Tommy Ryman, there was some talk of the other C-3POs. And I call them C-3POs.
Sure.
They are not C-3POs. Yeah. They are robots that look like C-3PO, but are different colors.
Right. Yeah.
So it's that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Which I think is interesting.
It is.
What do you like to archive?
Oh, God. All right.
What are you currently archiving?
What do you like? The thing that I'm archiving the most right now is my own sketches going back to when I was 13 years old. I have 55 videotapes that I'm slowly digitizing that are of no interest.
You gotta digitize them.
Exactly right.
VHS?
Mm-hmm.
3/4 inch.
VHS.
Mm-hmm. All right, so you're digitizing them into your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Sketches that you've written and acted in?
When you say written, improvised. quote okay. unquote. But these as are, a 13-year-old boy.
These are but it talking, right?
Mm-hmm.
But
oh, yeah.
not drawn sketches. Because you said animator earlier.
Good point. Good
so
point.
Just wanted to separate.
Sketch comedy. Bad right. improv sketch comedy. taped over mostly medical instruction videos because my dad worked at a hospital. So every once in a while there's a and then like a Rhesus Annie head, which by the way, a Rhesus Annie head without its skin was a common, popular character in our early sketches. Cause my dad gave it to us. It's the creepiest thing in the world, but I've been archiving that stuff because I started another podcast with my buddy Dan just to, he lives in Boise.
Okay.
And we have no other way to communicate other than Skype. So I figured, well,
as long as you're talking.
Why waste time having a conversation with a friend unless you're going to turn it into something that you could monetize? It's a joke.
It's a joke. And record it.
Yeah, exactly right. So we talk about it and we pick one sketch that we've done each week. We talk about it. We usually shit on it because they're horrible, but they're fun. I mean, the thing is, like, there's stuff that
we... And this is the guy that you started out doing them with.
Exactly
when
right.
When you were children.
Yeah, when we were 13 and 12.
Nice.
And there's running gags that I still put in the stuff that I write now.
Well, that's comedy gold.
Yeah, exactly
and
right.
The thing, you can't throw a joke out. The thing is, you can revamp it.
That's exactly
smarten
right.
it up. Mm-hmm. Tighten that bad up and then repurpose it.
Yeah.
So that's what you're doing.
Yeah, that. And then I'm working on scanning kind of page by page. I went back home last August. I have been waiting. Dan and I have been waiting for about 10 years to get this bag of his that had all of our sketches going from when we first met each other. So it's very important to us. And so
sure.
I got all the sketches, including, and I didn't realize our early stories that we wrote together are in there as well, going back to like 92. It doesn't sound that long ago, but it really is in the brain, especially
well,
when you're 12.
Well, especially if it's your childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
it's
in
the moment
1992.
You met. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like on paper, it's as close to the moment as you met as you're ever going to get. So we don't have any photos together or anything from that time because his family didn't like me. So we this is what we had.
Wow.
And so I got the bag back. And I digitized the whole thing, and I've slowly but surely been digitizing my childhood. To what end? I have no idea other than I need to digitize it. I need it archived.
Right.
That's the obsessive part of this. It's like I need to – that's the same reason I like the vice presidency, though, is nobody knows about it. So I want to make sure it's archived somewhere, even if it's in my stupid comedy documentary that I want to make.
Mm-hmm.
And I love archiving stuff that people don't give a shit about, you know? Including my own stuff. And that's fine. I can admit that my shit nobody cares about but us. But that's, we're making an hour out of it each week. You know, we enjoy
sure.
it. It's one way to talk about friendship.
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, you guys are, the idea, I have diary
mm-hmm.
from when I was a child.
Yeah.
I think I started it when I was 10 or 11. Maybe 9, actually.
Okay.
And it was, and I started writing it because I read Harriet the Spy.
That's awesome.
And Harriet the Spy had a journal.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started the journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I have most of it. And for years, I love the television program MASH
mm-hmm.
because I was a child.
Sure.
And because I love MASH, the doctor on MASH, Sigmund Friedman,
mm-hmm.
wrote in his journal to Sigmund Freud.
Okay.
And so I wrote to Sigmund Freud because my parents were constantly telling me I was crazy. And they were like, you are insane.
No.
You are insane. So I was like, so I would write these like the longest, and I have tried to, and what I did was mm-hmm. when I worked at Kinko's, I had a short lived career where I had a sweet, sweet, $5.75 job
nice.
At Kinko's in Minneapolis. And I copied my journal.
Mm-hmm.
And I copied it because I am a self-obsessed narcissist.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, this is going to be gold.
Mm-hmm.
And then I tried to reread it. Not so great.
You know.
Because I did reread it and I pulled some stuff out of it
okay.
that was good because there is a show called Mortified.
Yes.
Have you heard of Mortified?
I've heard of it and I've never gone. I've always
You should
wanted
totally
to see it.
Submit
yeah.
your thing to Mortified.
Okay.
And I think it's called Get Mortified or it's
okay.
just called Mortified.
Mm-hmm.
And what it is it's people, there's stuff from when they were kids.
Yeah.
That because we live in a digital age,
mm-hmm.
And I've gone to only one live episode and it
okay.
was fantastic. And what it was is a guy got up. He had to be 35 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And he sang a song that he had written when he was 16. He
mm-hmm.
played the guitar and sang that song. And it was horrible.
Mm-hmm.
And it was wonderful. And it was one of the greatest experiences of my life.
Yeah.
And then some woman got up and read from her journal about mm-hmm. boys
yeah.
When she was 13. And other people get up and they try to get different media.
Yeah.
You know, and a sketch
sure.
that you have video of.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Holy hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to like that. is what I'm telling you.
The problem with it is, and I like that, and I think maybe I will, because actually I feel like I heard about that first, so it had to have slightly inspired me to do the podcast.
Okay.
There's almost no way that it didn't. But I mean, there's 50 of these VHS tapes. I just don't have the, it is starting to hurt my brain. Like, it's too much.
How many have you done? How many have you digitized?
20 of them, maybe.
Okay, so you only have another 30 to go.
Yeah, only 30 more. And
the thing is one of the early ones might be enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But not for me. No. I need, you know what I mean, though?
To submit to Mortify.
Of course, no, I
for
would.
For you,
I would,
you're a completist.
A yeah, that's a problem. But to be a completist for yourself, again, like you say, it's a self-obsession problem.
Right. But you are not alone. You are not alone,
no,
my friend. Mark Maron once told, maybe me, maybe on stage, can't idea. I felt like he was talking to me, you guys. Anyway, so Maron said that he has kept every notebook from when he was when he first started doing stand-up. And he was like, that he has an idea that one day people are going to go through it, and they're going to really, they're going to be like, oh man, look at this. And no one is. No one is. And it's very sad.
Yeah.
But alternately, Maria Bamford throws out her notebooks when she's done, which hurts my soul.
I can see that. I can see it hurting your soul because she's obviously a goddamn genius.
Right.
But I can see why she would do it being the person she is.
Because she doesn't want, she's like, I'm done.
Yeah.
I'm done with that. I need a new notebook and gone. And I'm like, well, wouldn't you want to cull through? What I used to do is I used to cull through my old notebook and the first three pages of my new notebook would be from that old, just summation of what that notebook was.
That's awesome. Okay.
And then, of course, stacked in my closet are all of my notebooks.
Holy shit.
But it's dumb. But what Maria, hilariously, because, and I've told this story before, is that when she told me that, because I was like, you could give it to me and I could sell it on eBay when you're gone years and years from now. And she's like, watch this. And she pulled out her notebook and threw it away in front of me.
That's amazing.
I was like, fair enough. And she did not, which I think is admirable of her in our friendship, have to tell me that I should not scrabble through the garbage and get it. And I have to say, this is a good thing about me. I did not think about scrabbling through the garbage and getting it. Though clearly afterwards, I was like, I could have scrabbled through the garbage and got that. Scrabble.
That's okay. I like it. Sounds good. Shit, that's strength of will, though, to do that with your own stuff. Again, even without the self-obsession thing. Like, I'm always worried I'm going to forget.
Yeah.
I've got this little notebook. You know what? I have in this, I bookmarked this for a reason. This is like, a couple years ago, I was feeling depressed, as I'm wont to do. We're comedian types, right?
Okay.
So I'm like, maybe I should write a list of
human
shit
condition.
I feel like I've accomplished or things I've done that I'm proud of. And these are not necessarily completed, but like you can see that this doesn't make any sense if you were just look, because it's like, oh, I need to fill this space in by right. But there's a lot of stuff in here. But this is, again, this is like, I was even writing like, hey, what are the different things I'm obsessed with? And I'm like, this is an archive of my own obsessions. Like, I was trying to write down
what are the things you're obsessed with as long as we're in it.
Yeah, no, I didn't get to everything, but Disney and animation at 12 and 13. 14.
Oh, you did a timeline.
I did.
Oh, awesome.
Video production. They created a class for us in our school. Like, just so that we could do that, I was interested in puppeteering, although Dan kind of trumped me in the puppeteering department. I was pissed.
Who's Dan? Who?
My best friend, Dan.
Oh, that'll happen.
Yeah, motherfucker.
Did you get competitive?
Little. I get just angry. I don't have the energy for competitiveness. I hate being competitive. If I lose, I'm just like, oh, fuck it. Like, I get like that a lot. That's why.
You don't consider that competitive? You consider
it is.
That?
No, it certainly is. But like, if I'm not trying to get better than the person I think has just trumped me, then it's just, that's lazy.
Then you're like,
lazy
that's competitiveness. Fine. Yeah. I'm not even trying.
Exactly right.
So it doesn't matter if you're better at me.
Who cares? You know?
Wow.
That happens sometimes. But,
right. Well, no, it's a perfectionist thing where you're just, because I mean, I think we all do it where you're just like, well, if I can't be perfect at it, screw it.
Uh-huh.
And if I certainly can't be better than the people around me, screw it.
It's the shittiest attitude, but it's so common.
Well, it's super, and it's something you can fight. It's something you can embrace. go for it, America. Rangers, knock yourself out.
Do it. Let's see. 15, I didn't have anything at the time. I'm sure there was something. I know there's a bunch of blank ones. A lot, like this one's like depression. That's all that was. 16, Pez, I put.
The Pez dispensers? The candy Pez?
Both, but my mom just sent me pictures of what I've got back home, and it's about 200 dispensers.
Really? They now, were you going away. Themed?
No.
Were they?
Whatever I could buy. I had a job for the first time, so I was spending money on shit I shouldn't spend it on.
Oh, right.
Legos were the next step after that.
Excellent.
The first Star Wars Legos, I bought them all. That cost me like $200. I was 17. Right. What the hell was I doing?
So, you know, I was just talking to Tommy Ryman about Legos,
yeah.
And he's got... He, first of all, again, I am alerted. This is the third time I will be discussing Lego on the program. Plural of Lego? Lego. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Little did I know. Mm-hmm. And, but the deal, what is, he? We talked about there's architecture Lego.
Sure.
There's city Lego or something.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's superhero, and then there's themed Lego.
Yeah.
Like, you can go Marvel, you can go DC, you can go Star Wars, you can go Indiana Jones.
Yeah.
What do you like?
Whatever's got the nicest pieces. I was
You're going specific pieces. He told me there were guys like you.
Yeah, like... Not and you know it's just something that, like, if I'm looking at this set that you've got sitting here, because it's from the Lego movie, it's a Cobb job, which represents what it is to be a Lego fanatic, I think. But like, here, let me show you something. I brought something with me, okay? And I know it doesn't help anybody at home, but this doesn't look like anything, okay? But that is two of my obsessions in one, because I made a Pez dispenser out of Legos. That is what that is. If you roll that the other way, it should, hopefully it doesn't stick. It'll probably stick from just my luck. But it is, here, let me see if I can.
Oh, my God. This is a Pez dispenser.
It is a Pez dispenser made out of Legos.
So you bought the gear?
These pieces
The gear pieces.
Yeah. Well, I mean, these are like... Now it's stuck. What did I do to it? But these pieces are from sets as varied as Star Wars ones to, like, more little kid sets that you can get.
Oh, you're a master builder.
No, I don't know what I'm doing. But, like, here we go. So there you go. See? So then the Pez comes out. Like,
oh, that. I see it.
See what I'm
nice.
Saying? So with two wheels.
I'll take it.
This is,
I'll have a Pez.
Do it.
What am I, made of stone?
This is the second Pez dispenser I've made out of Legos. This is a little more streamlined than the other one. But that's what I like to do. If I find the right pieces to make a thing, I'll make a thing. Like, I hate that there are Lego cars where it's just single seat like that one. I don't like it. So I've made, like, realistic, like, they're extra wide cars so that my Lego men will fit. It's so stupid.
That's nice.
It's so dumb. It's really relaxing. It is the single most relaxing thing I can do.
Making it not dumb.
You know what I mean? Like, writing, great. Well, writing is wonderful, but it might be a second. Because there's no effort put into Legos. There's a brain there's a brain function back there that's doing the work for me.
So you just like building and you like taking bricks and getting to it and getting busy.
It's fun.
And so do you make I like that you're making a Pez dispenser.
Uh-huh.
But is it because the only thing I draw, like when I get nervous or I'm just kind of sitting around and there's a space to draw, I will draw Snoopy.
Okay. Yeah, but that's...
And it is. It's the only thing I can draw.
That's weird. Continue, but then I've got a story about it. That's weird.
Why is it?
Why? The first thing I ever learned to draw was Snoopy, and it is is not the proper Snoopy like you're drawing. In second grade, I lived in Germany. This kid was drawing his rock and roll version of Snoopy.
Okay.
Who had his head kicked back. You know when Snoopy's dancing, he's got his head kicked back.
Yeah, yeah.
He's elongated. But it was that, and he was holding a guitar, and he would draw it a few times, like, you drew the same drawing, and everybody's like, wow, you can really draw, which, yeah, he could, for second grade, especially. And so,
seriously,
I got a copy of it, or I tried to copy it.
Mm-hmm.
I drew that same Snoopy, like, 30 times. I got scrap paper just to draw that Snoopy when I went home.
Right.
It's just weird that that's the one thing you draw, and that brings me back to the first time. That's how I learned to draw, was ripping this kid off.
Well, I think I don't think it's any sort of...
Those are really good.
That it's anything but, you know... I think everybody wants to draw Snoopy but there were guys, I remember in high school, guys that would have their number two pencil and would cover the desk. Did you guys draw on the desks in high school?
Like on the actual desk itself? Yeah, I'm sure I did. I had to have. Not as much as the other kids, but.
But some kids did, and I never did. But they would be like, you would try to get that desk. Because you're like, look what Carrie and Larry did.
Right.
They were twins. And I was like, look at the fuck. Look at the. And then, you know, and I would try to copy them myself, but I wasn't very good at it.
Sure.
But this Snoopy is all that's left of eighth grade science, by the way.
It's a good Snoopy.
It's instead of... sure.
It's a solid Snoopy.
It's a good solid Snoopy. Woodstock, not as good. So
I feel like he's harder to draw.
Well, he's such a mess. So you're just
now
like,
he looks like Pigpen the Bird.
Right, he's Pigpen the Bird. And but it's... But I love that you know, that you you have the gear pieces that mm-hmm. make you want to draw, make something.
Yeah.
And then it's soothing. I mean, that's, I think a very good dorkdom is something that calms the inside of your head mm-hmm. and it stops the voices.
It takes a lot.
Whether there's actual voices or not.
Mm-hmm.
And what I tend to do is I do a little rereading. Mm-hmm. I do some rereading and then I do some rereading. And if I'm agitated, you know, and when agitated, I like to pause
mm-hmm.
and then I like to grab that book again, whatever that book is that's handy.
Yeah.
And do a little reread and get back into a story that I already know the end of.
Yep.
Which is nice.
It is,
which
relaxing,
is nice.
Yeah.
Do you like to read?
I do. I don't read nearly enough as I should.
What's a good book that you've read recently?
I'm horrible at reading fiction and I need to be better at it.
Why?
Why do I need to be better at reading it? I just don't do it. I read biographies and other shit.
I think there's people who like to read mostly nonfiction and people who like to read mostly fiction.
I guess
fiction.
That's probably true, but I
read
love
very
fiction.
Little nonfiction.
But I love fiction.
I love nonfiction. I never read it. And it makes me feel smart when I finish a nonfiction mm-hmm. book. But I don't. I like to read fiction because I don't need to feel smart. I need to feel happy.
I think the only fiction that I'm on is like that I've read recently is reading The Hobbit to my wife. That's something she grew up with though her whole life, and I haven't gotten through the book the whole way, but she'll read it to me. Sometimes I'll read it to her.
So you guys are sharing that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty.
Yeah.
That's nice.
It's
I like
fun.
That.
And I've never finished The Hobbit as a book. So.
That'll be fine. The last third of it gets real grown up.
This is
real
what I understand.
Real grown up.
Yeah.
But what's a good nonfiction that you've been...
What the hell is the name of John Cleese's book? I'm reading his autobiography right now.
John Cleese's autobiography?
Yes.
Is it pretty good?
It's really good.
Yeah?
It's fascinating because he's talked about how he's at that point in life where he doesn't give a fuck about anything.
Right.
And it's
I don't know when he
so
did. When did he?
I don't know.
I'm uncertain when John Cleese was super uptight.
Well, this book will tell you because at the beginning of it, he was like he was a little mama's boy.
Wound? Okay.
He was a mama's boy. He was very tightly wound. Just so like he is. It's a good book. And I wish I could remember that fucking name of it, but it's a really good book.
People have the Internet. It
That's
turns
true.
Out. They'll
Use
look
the
it
internet,
up.
Kids.
They'll be fine.
There's also a book called Drunk Stoned Brilliant Dead, and it's like a coffee table book, and it's all about the National Lampoon, which I need to get through. Thick with art. It's a lot of art.
Oh,
and
it's
so I need
art.
To get through it, yeah.
National Lampoon, the magazine?
From the magazine, yeah. There's a lot of great covers and stuff in it.
Okay.
Reprints of articles that they've fixed up and made look pretty.
Oh, that's nice.
It's really good.
Do you have a nice coffee table to put it on?
No. You know, I think we're done with our coffee table, so we just put it sort of on the side.
Yeah. But it's big. It's one of the big kind of
it's
coffee table-y
big,
book.
Yeah. All my comedy books are kind of in my office where we do the podcast. So.
I read Furious Cool about
Furious
a year
cool.
ago.
What's that
Which
about?
Is the... one of the Richard Pryor biographies.
Oh.
And I had never... I don't know anything about Richard Pryor.
Mm-hmm.
All I know, a couple of years ago, my buddy Jim Wooster had the album, an album of one of his live performances mm-hmm. from the early 70s. And mm-hmm. we sat and we listened to it with a couple other people. And all I could say when I was done listening to it, I was like, this stuff has been hacked so bad.
Oh, yeah.
That I can't, it's very hard for me to laugh at.
Right.
Because I've heard
that.
All these jokes.
Yeah.
And I've heard them from other people.
Mm-hmm.
But other people have also had the same experiences,
sure.
you know, in their upbringing. So maybe they've had a bit of a twist to it. But some of it's just flat out just theft.
Mm-hmm.
And that's too bad, too. But, do you have, by the way, Jason Klamm, let us, K-L-A-M-M, tell people again that you are at J Klamm on Twitter,
mm-hmm.
but you're at Comedy on Vinyl on Instagram and all that stuff. And that's the name of your podcast, your main podcast.
My main podcast.
And if you go to stolendress.com, it'll have your podcast, it'll have your production stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so Bland Ambition sounds like a fascinating book.
Yep. You should pick that up.
I do like it.
You can get it for $2 on Amazon, I'm sure, right now.
Right, or I have a used bookstore over there.
Or go to the Iliad or whatever.
Yeah, the Iliad.
Yeah, it's a great bookstore.
It's a bookstore.
I love that place.
Yeah, I bet you. And, hey, my chicken's ready, you guys. And it has been an hour, so this has been awesome, Jason Klamm. Thank you so much for doing the show.
Yeah, thank you.
And thanks for listening, Rangers. Take care out there.
My hat. They're dancing around my hat, my hat, my hat, my hat. Well, what do you think of that? If it looks like a Mexican hat dance and it sounds like a Mexican hat dance, it's most likely a Mexican hat dance. So take off your hat and let's dance.
Yay! Oh, my God. Why don't we just call that as the end of the show?